are going to do part two of our conversation right now with an American patriot who has survived somehow extraordinary duress, torture, torment, abuse. Karen Stewart has been through it all. We are going to begin to talk about just some of the things a whistleblower has to contend with, and it's not going to be fun listening, but I want to tell you that she is by no means understating the issue, and she points out that this is widespread, that maybe hundreds of thousands of people are involved with it. We're going to talk about gang stalking, and remember, a lot of you who weren't here will say, well, how can they hire that many people to do this kind of work, and who would do that? Well, as she made clear last night, this really began under George W. Bush. It's a, we'll call it a nationwide patriot militia of evil. These people all get paid to cause nothing but grief, harassment, abuse, and often injury or worse to targeted individuals like Karen Stewart. And there are so many others. This is a very big topic that is never talked about. It's hidden. And I guess with good reason as far as the controllers are concerned. We heard last night about Karen's experience in the NSA and how we were up to the point where she was going to take her grievances at having been really abused in the agency to the person who is allegedly there to hear these kinds of things. Welcome back, Karen. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm okay. What was the result? What kind of reaction did you get from last night's program? Anything change in your life? Did they hassle you at all?
No, same old thing. They're plodding right through, just doing the same old things.
Okay, it didn't get worse, so I was worried about that. That's good. All right, let's
thank you.
Let's pick it up where we were. You were going to go to, and I've forgotten the man's title. What was the title you were going to see someone in the NSA? With the complaint.
Well, I had transferred to another office, and once I got the training for that office under my belt, I felt like, okay, now is the time to go to the Inspector General and tell him what had happened to me in weapons and space.
That's right.
My work credit, the theft of a double promotion, it turns out, for that work,
yeah.
And then to protect themselves, a false accusation against me. So I got through
that. That's major abuse, and the agency. You would hope,
oh, heavens, yes.
Would want to hear about this kind of thing. You'd think that they'd want to have a good esprit de corps, good work ethics, confidence in the department standing up for them if they were abused like you were. And we're going to find out, I think, a different story. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Okay. So in the new office, I decided it was time to make a contact with the Office of the Inspector General, and I called someone named William, and he was the liaison between the IG and this particular office. And I told him what had happened in general terms, and he said, oh, yes, do please put down times, date, names, everything. He said, give me detail, and then he said, I will take it to the Inspector General. He said, this is exactly the type of thing we're here for. And that, of course, was exactly what I wanted to hear.
You bet.
So I spent some time putting everything down in an email where I detailed names and dates and all that kind of thing, and then I sent it to him, and then I didn't hear back from him. And so I did. I went ahead and called him after I thought, well, he's had enough time. And when I got him on the phone, he was extraordinarily hostile. And I said, well, what have you decided? And he said, oh, I took this to the Inspector General. And at that time, I believe it was Joel Brenner. And he said, we don't care why anybody's promoted. It's all subjective. So we're not going to waste our time in, basically investigating this problem.
Oh, my.
And I was absolutely
yeah.
stunned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you think that this might be just kind of, at the time, were you looking at two possibilities, that this was just a quirk that the IG had, or was there something else in motion here?
Well, it was interesting to me because I knew the protocol at NSA for basically finding out that somebody was having an affair, especially a manager. The protocol was that security would call them in and confront them and say, are you having an affair? And if they said yes, they said, well, basically you have two choices. You can either resign right now because you're compromised.
Wow.
And then you can keep your little secret, or we can call in your spouse and you can tell him or her in front of us in the security office what you've done, and then you can't be blackmailed anymore. You may lose your wife or your husband, but as far as we're concerned, you can keep your job.
So that's their number one concern. They're instantly compromised and blackmailable, and that's national security right there.
Yes, yes. So I was rather stunned that security had turned on me and didn't care about this fact, because I had been told that the woman was promoted in my place because not only was she having an affair with the head guy at Weapons and Space, but analyst had told me that she actually had been having affairs with multiple managers. She was working her way through multiple managers at Weapons and Space.
Mm-hmm.
And
does that suggest to you that she might be a mole working there?
That really stunned me that they wouldn't have done something about a woman like that.
Uh-huh.
And it occurred to me that maybe she was a mole and that she was a mole for security.
There you go.
Because the things in Weapons of Space are highly compartmented and security has no business knowing what is going on. They're concerned with personnel. Are they honest? Are they dishonest? You know, are they stealing secrets? Are they being blackmailed, et cetera, et cetera? That is what NSA security is supposed to be concerned with. They are not supposed to know anything about the operations of any of the departments.
How interesting. Okay. It's all compartmentalized. Interesting. All right, go ahead.
So, I went to the IG and got rebuffed. And the interesting thing to me was the next day when I came into work, I saw a man I didn't know leaving my manager's office. And shortly thereafter, the branch chief came out and she said, "Karen, what is your purpose in pursuing this IG complaint?" So I knew immediately the man had to have been William, the one that I was talking to from the inspector general's office. And I looked at her and I thought, well, why in the world would you even question why I would ask, you know, IG to look into something? And I just looked at her and I said, "Justice?" And she didn't say anything and she went back into her office. Well, I think that was the summer of about July 2006. Well, after that, I was called down for a quote-unquote routine investigation, a reinvestigation. And so I went thinking this is probably not routine. This has to do with the IG request.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in there and was truthful with the guy about what had happened. And the next day he called me in and he said, "Well, we want you to go to psych services because, you know, basically we think you've imagined this whole thing."
Oh, so my God.
So I was absolutely floored, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that week, it was within a day or two, I went to see a psychologist who worked for security, which is an entirely separate thing from the med center, all right? She worked for security.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to her office, and before I could even get my tush in the chair, she started telling me basically if I didn't drop the IG investigation request that she was going to go through all of my psychological tests for the past 20 something years and that she would find a problem.
She'd build a case and then that would be the end of you, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And she kept saying, and this was a theme for the next few years, she kept saying, "And isn't it a shame that you're so close to retirement?" So the threat was, you know, you drop the case or we're firing you and basically
you lose all your benefits.
Career's in the toilet.
Gone.
Right.
Everything.
Your career's in the toilet.
That
right.
happened to a friend of mine who worked at NASA for 35 years, Clark McClelland. He talked too much, got in trouble, and stood on the truth and lost everything.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. Please go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you know, we ended up arguing, and I told her, I said, "You know, you don't have a right to do anything like that." I said, "I have passed those psychological tests. There isn't a problem. There wasn't a problem when you hired me, and there isn't a problem now." I said, "In fact, last year I had a baseline from one of your senior psychologists, and he told me that I was one of the most healthy mentally and emotionally that he'd ever met." And so I basically looked at her, and I said, "So good luck with that." And so I probably shouldn't have done that because she took it as a challenge. By August, my husband and I had gone out for a usual Saturday. We would go out and have an early lunch and then run errands and come back.
Uh-huh.
And as we came back, I saw a man leaving the side of our house as if he had come from the garage door, which didn't make any sense that he would be on the property or leaving the house. So we went into the house and looked around and did not see a TV or anything stolen. So we thought, well, maybe he just was, you know, walking through the yard or something. And when I went to the back sliding glass door and touched it to go outside on the deck, mm-hmm. the entire mechanism for the handle and the lock fell to the ground. It had mm-hmm. been sawn in half and put back on the door.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's
so
the first. That was the first instance that we can put in the gang stalking basket, I guess.
Yes, but it was NSA. It was not a civilian. It turns out to have been an NSA.
Oh, they sent their own
executive.
People out to bother you, huh?
This okay. one, this started out with NSA personnel doing the stalking.
Uh-huh. All right. Hold on. When did you put two and two together? And when you saw the handle in pieces, I guess, and process that, your husband's there, you got to say, all right, look, this is... In other words, no one's broken into the house and tried to cover that up. This is, I want people to understand, this is an overt act to let you know your security, you don't have any at home.
Right, right. Well, I don't think he counted on me seeing him leaving the house, but I did.
Uh-huh.
Now, we talked about whether to call the police or not, and my husband knew about the harassment, and he didn't want to call the police because he said, look, there's nothing missing. We've got all the TVs, everything's here, you know, it'll just be for nothing. And so, you know, I reluctantly agreed. I said, okay, we'll let it go. Well, the later that day, we noticed that when we would get a phone call, it would click every 20 seconds or so.
Uh-huh.
And it had never done that before. And in fact, later in the day when I turned on the TV had a clicking as well every 20, 22 seconds. And there was a slight electrical, I don't know what to call it, a spurt or the
surge.
Picture would flash out and then back in again.
Uh-huh.
So every 20 seconds. And I called my husband to take a look at it. He said, oh, well, the TV must be burning out and we'll have to get a new one. And so I had known from Russell Tice, who I was slightly acquainted with, that if NSA comes into your house and bugs you, instead of getting a warrant and going to AT&T or Comcast or somewhere where they could basically hack into your account from there and you'd never know it, he said if they do it illegally, then you've got that 20, 22-second delay where you've got, you know, basically clicking. And so I said, uh-huh. So they basically have come into the house and bugged the phone. And then we noticed that the cable wasn't working right either, so they had hacked into the cable. And then the TV wasn't working right. And I thought, why would the TV not be working right? And then I figured out that even if you go to like a cheap spy shop, they can give you a lens finder that will find hidden miniature cameras. Well, if you put that camera inside of a TV, it's already under a big lens, so you can't possibly detect it.
Got it.
So it appeared that they had also put cameras in the TVs.
They were watching you from the TVs.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's what it appeared to be. And I did later test that out, and to my satisfaction, I proved it to myself that it was true. You know, they tell you to do certain things if you're in the middle of being sexually assaulted, to try to basically make the people stop. And
right.
I will tell you that I did some of those things and got a reaction from executives that I had never met. But if they passed me in the hall, they'd avert their eyes or they'd become totally embarrassed. And I said, there's no reason for that. They don't know me, but if they were watching, then that would mean that they might have a reaction like this.
Karen, excuse me. Are you suggesting that at that point it was possible, probable, that they were recording, digitally recording, video recording, you and your husband in the privacy of your own home doing whatever you may or may not have been doing, and sharing it amongst senior staff that knew you?
Well, they didn't even know me. Yeah.
That knew, well, they knew of you, but they had to know of you, or they wouldn't have been embarrassed, so to speak. They wouldn't have reacted.
Exactly.
Okay. In other words, this was, this became a cause celeb in the dark side of the agency, to the extent that they were showing people who you didn't even work with video of you in your own home, in the privacy of your own home, that caused them to act embarrassed when they passed you in the hall. This is disgusting.
Yes.
We're already into very ugly territory here. Now, for those of you listening who might say, nah, just keep listening. Don't pass judgment. Keep your mind open. Go ahead, Karen.
Well, I will say that this was a Saturday when we discovered the break-in. And Monday morning, I went to work, and as I was going into my office door, I saw the very same man working in the server closet just outside my office. And I'd never seen him before, but there I saw him two days later and at NSA. So I said, okay, well, that
was the guy you saw outside the garage?
Yes.
Okay, and you recognized him, you clocked him, he's in the NSA. Oh, you got him. All right.
Yeah, I know for a fact that the NSA broke into my house. So as I go by him, he's thinking that I have no idea who he is, because he didn't imagine that I saw him leaving the house.
Uh-huh.
And so I turned to him and I said, oh, that was a nice red shirt you were wearing in my neighborhood Saturday.
Good.
And he absolutely blanched. He blanched and walked into the server closet, turned his back to me, and wouldn't say a word. He was a very unusual-looking man. He was short. He had a slight pot belly. He had a huge mane of hair, like white hair and white beard. Obviously, he took pride in his long hair. He was probably at that time about 60 years old. And like I said, he was working in the server closet. And so I went inside my office, and I sat down at my desk and tried to turn on my computer, but it wouldn't even turn on. And I looked in to ask other people, is your computer working all right? And everybody in the office had their computer working just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I called technical support and complained to them, said this is not working at all. And they said, we have no idea what the problem is. And throughout the day, I would call them, and they'd say, we have no idea what the problem is, can't fix it. And so I basically did all kinds of paperwork that day. But I thought at lunchtime, I said, you know what, since I'm passing this guy by and I'm seeing him a lot, I'm just going to take a pencil and paper and draw him, because I've been basically drawing since I was 6 years old. So I drew a caricature of him so I'd remember what he looked like. And by about 3:30 that day, he left, and voila, my computer was working magically again. And so I'll go through that. The next week, my husband actually did get a new TV, and we switched them out, and the TV was working just fine. We had the other one on the dining room table waiting to be given to Goodwill.
Uh-huh.
And within 2 days of getting the TV, I came home, turned it on, and it was clicking.
Again. So in the audio channel of your TV, it's a small click every 20 seconds. It's a repeating click.
Right. Every 20, 22 seconds.
You'd think that they'd be able to fix a click like that so they wouldn't be discovered. You'd think. Was this a flat screen TV?
This is a more modern one, but I said, you know, that's interesting because it was working just fine. Now it's clicking.
Yeah.
So I reconnected the old TV, and it was not clicking anymore.
They just swapped the parts, sounds like.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. But in the next few weeks, we did notice that we had some missing items. We had missing extra car keys, missing extra mail keys, missing extra house keys.
God. And how's your husband? And he's working, I assume, right? He's employed. He's got his own life, job.
Right, right.
And you're still trying to work under this kind of growing black cloud over your head, and you can't ignore it anymore. It's in your home. Your life has been violated. This is really ugly. And you're still trying to work. Do your job.
Yes, I am still trying to work. And I'm finding that, well, actually, at one point, my old partner from Weapons in Space, Gary, who was like a technical guy that I leaned on for explanation so that I could write things in layman's terms, he called me up and he said, Karen, they're doing your reinvestigation, and they come to my house and ask me a few questions. And I said, okay, that's fine. He said, no, you don't understand. He said, the person who came here told me all kinds of vile things about you. And I said, what? He said, no, he said, and he was trying to attribute that to me. And he said, we literally, and I almost got into a fist fight. I said, you're kidding. Because the purpose of a reinvestigation is you go in totally neutral and you see what the person has to say about that person. You don't put ideas in their head. He said, oh no. He said, something's wrong. Something's going on. They're slandering you.
Well, can you give me, I don't need details, but just in general, what kinds of things was this man spreading to your former work associate? Just having to do with some of the things that observed in your home, or just made up out of whole cloth? What?
Well, it sounds like it was made up out of whole cloth. He would not give me details, but he said to me, he said, Karen, I knew this is so totally out of character for you. He said, I've known you several years, and he said what they were saying was outrageous. Absolutely not based on anything, just outrageous. And so I thanked him, and then I said, okay, well, they're ramping it up. And I basically had several people who were begging security to talk to them on my behalf to say, yes, this was Karen's work. Yes, it was stolen. Those were her promotions that this woman got. She's not done anything wrong. She doesn't smoke or drink or anything. We've known her 10, 20, 30 years, not 30 at that point, but right. We've known her a long time. And this is not possible that she's done something. And they refused to talk to them. I was told we begged them and they ignored us. And yet the spurious accusations of one of the people involved in colluding to steal my work and promotion, her spurious accusations were acted upon like a barreling train down the tracks,
Right. Hold on, Karen. What I want to do is ask our sponsors to indulge this break so I can continue with Karen. This is a very important story, and thank you, sponsors, very much. Okay, Karen, go ahead. See, this is all, what this is, it's suggesting and showing us that the NSA is run by people of less than stellar character. Okay? That's just for openers. And this is really not an inspiring thing to hear about. Go ahead.
No, I would say if you want to compromise any type of agency, you basically put your own people into security and the Inspector General
absolutely.
And maybe Counsel General as well.
See,
you
that's
compromise the watchdogs.
Yes, yes, and that's how any power organization works. They take the key positions and they promote their own from within, and they have it. And we've been talking on this program for the last, I don't know how long overall, about the worldwide cult that runs things. I'm talking about a pedophilia satanic cult. And they do the same thing in most every town in America, city, town, whatever, community. They'll have people in key positions in order to protect the pedophilia and the satanic ritual abuse that's going on in that town. And it goes on. It's there. So the same technique works in the NSA like it does everywhere else. Key positions, and you own the whole thing. Go ahead.
Well, apparently, because then they could basically blackmail any manager that they wanted to and take any secret that they wanted to and do God knows what with it.
Yep. Wow. All right. So they got into the house. They put a camera basically in the TV. I've often wondered, my house, my studio, and so forth, if the electronics there are compromised, and I would bet that they have been for many years. This is really not particularly sophisticated technology. The ugly part of it is the fact that they do it. Anyway, go ahead, please.
And obviously they didn't have a warrant, so they didn't have an accusation that held up anywhere, you know, so, or they wouldn't have broken in like that. But it's, that was 2006, August of 2006, and at that point I started being followed at work. I would have a man lingering in the hall, and if I went to the ladies' room, he'd follow me there. If I went to the drugstore, he'd follow me there, or, you know, various people, but one stationed outside my office to follow me anywhere I went for intimidation purposes.
That's all strictly, and that's pure intimidation. They weren't really trying to gather any intelligence, nothing through surveillance. It was there to hassle the hell out of you.
Exactly. Exactly. And I had a particularly good friend, and we would go to lunch very often, and they would make sure to know that they would, to let us know that they were taking the table nearest to us, and they would even lean over to listen to what we were saying. And what we were saying obviously was totally innocuous. But later on, you know, and my friend had noticed that, and then later on she said, listen, she says, you know how they will search random bags? Every so often they search, maybe they tell themselves, okay, every fifth woman we're going to search her purse. And I said, yeah. And so she said, well, they've been searching my purse for weeks now, each and every day. And she said, no matter what size purse I have, they search it. She said, I could have a purse the size of a wallet, and they're searching it. And I said, you're kidding. What is it they think that I'm doing? And she said, I have no idea. So, you know, they started acting like they were suspicious of me and then sharing it with my coworkers. And so I endured that. And they were following me not only inside NSA, but then they branched out and they'd be waiting for me to go to work and come back from work so that they could follow me in cars. And if I stopped in the grocery store or a bookstore, then they would send two or three people in to follow, far too close for it to be secretly following. It was just basically hassling.
Got it.
And
was this still NSA, Karen, or are we moving into the realm of the national malicious stalking force?
The brown shirts?
Yeah.
Actually, it was NSA for about 2.5 years, and at that point they had NSA personnel with the green badges and NSA contractors with blue badges following me around, and they weren't always bright enough to take their badges off, so I knew exactly who it was.
How funny. I gotta laugh at some of this. So they have cars out in front of your house, or one, and they're waiting for you when you get up and go to work, and they follow you to the store, they follow you to work, and they do it in such a way that you can see them. You're smart, you're very sharp, and they're going to be seen. That's okay. That's part of the game, right?
Right. It's the intimidation factor.
Yeah.
You know, I think they were trying to make me report them, but who am I going to report them to? Security?
Exactly. Exactly.
So I endured that for about 2.5 years. And
2.5 years you put up with that?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
I just, to the best of my ability, I was ignoring them. You know, and they weren't doing anything other than following me and obviously listening to me. My husband and I would do little tests, and we'd say, okay, this Saturday we want to go to restaurant A, but we're going to say we're going to restaurant B, and then we're going to see if it fills up, or whether it's empty, because we would usually go do lunch at 11 o'clock in the morning to just be alone in the restaurant and not be there with, you know, 100 other people.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, once they started being followed, we would go, we'd say, hey, let's go here this Saturday. We'd get there and it would already be crowded at 11, which was highly unusual. So we started playing little games to see if they were listening to where we were going. And sure enough, that's exactly what they were doing. They had, you know, we assured ourselves, yes, the house is bugged. So, like I said, we did several tests and were convinced that we were entirely correct. But
can I ask you a quick question about the house being bugged? There are how many different ways can a house be bugged? What, a dozen? More? They can put devices in almost anything, any electronic appliance. Sometimes in the studio and at home, I'll hear a very short electronic tone. And there's no way that there's anything generating that tone that I own, and I don't know where it's coming from. It's like a little cell phone or flip phone tone, just a beep, just like that. And what was that? So there are a lot of things they can do.
There are, but I'll tell you about one that I didn't even know about. I was talking to a friend, and I was saying, you know, between midnight and dawn, I am starting to hear what sounds like an electronic transmission. And I described it, and I said, almost like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, except not staccato like a,
Morse code?
Well, it just was more, right. It wasn't exactly like that, but it was a broader sound, more electrical.
Okay.
And the friend told me, he said, oh, that's a burst bug. And I said, well, what is that? He said, well, what they're doing, he said, that is a passive bug. He said, if you go to any novelty spy store, you can find a bug detector and detect run-of-the-mill bugs. He said, but they don't want you to find it. So what they've done is they've taken a burst bug and most likely put it into your vent system because it has tremendously good acoustics all over the house.
Oh, yes.
And what they do is record for 24 hours, and this is passive, you can't find it, and then they come to within a few feet of the side of your house because they have to be in a certain proximity to download what they've recorded all day from the burst bug. And that's at that point you'll hear the electronic transmission, and that's the only time you could actually detect it and find it if you had the right equipment. So that went on for several months.
And this was not very loud, but you could still hear it. It was just faint, but you could hear it.
Right, exactly. So
okay,
it was unusual.
Right.
I started up and hearing it.
Uh-huh.
Come Christmas or so, 2008, I said, all right, you know what, I'm going to go to Florida for Christmas. I'm going to visit my elderly parents and my siblings and friends,
mm-hmm.
and we'll see if I get away from it. Well, on the in preparing for the trip down, I was running certain errands, and I was supposed to leave on a Sunday. And on Saturday, I went to ship a package, and my credit card was declined. So I tried to use my other one, and it was declined. And I said, all right, I don't have much on these credit cards, so why is it declined? And I called and could not find any kind of reason. Nobody could tell me why. And I said, well, how am I going to drive down to Florida if I can't use my credit cards? And so my husband said, well, here, take mine. Here, take the one that you basically are part of, but I never use because it's his. He said, mm-hmm. so just go ahead and take that. And So I drove down and I used that credit card, and it struck me that when they do a reinvestigation, they demand your credit card account number so they can check and make sure you're not in debt $100 million or something. But I had never given them his because it's not mine, it's his.
Now this
but
is a list.
That I gave them
Karen, how long was the drive to Florida?
2 days.
All right. Did you have anybody tailing you that you noticed during that time? You had to be completely on guard, I'm sure, by then. Did anything unusual happen on the trip?
Absolutely. I noticed that by the time I got out of Washington, I started passing major interchanges, and there would be somebody sitting on the side of the road who would pull in after I passed them and tail me. And then at the next major interchange, they'd leave, and then somebody else a few yards away from that interchange would pull in and follow me again. So I got relay followed the entire time. I went to the Carolinas, spent the night, and and then got followed all the way down to Florida in exactly the same way. And I said, I'll be darned. I can't believe they're following me all the way to Florida.
Excuse me, I just want to get all the little details I can. Did you think that these were still NSA, or are we into the private patriot militia gang stalking?
I mean, that's
a lot of people. That's a lot of money, see?
It is, but I suspect, and I don't know why, at this point I suspect it was FBI, because they're pretty much NSA puppets.
Okay.
So I get all the way down to Florida, and I greet my mother, walk into the house because I'm staying with my parents for the holidays,
mm-hmm.
and I find my father talking to a cable man, and my mother's explaining, well, our cable has been wonky for, you know, like a week, week and a half or something. I said, really? And she said, yeah, we can barely make calls out. The internet doesn't really work. And we're having all kinds of problems. And I thought, well, that's very interesting. Because with NSA, when you go on vacation, you have to tell them where you're going and how long you expect to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So they had their address.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she said, and this is odd because I heard one of the dogs barking. They had two Newfoundlands, and one of the dogs was barking up a storm, and she said she went outside and found two men trying to access their backyard, and it's a fenced backyard, but the dogs were stopping them from getting in, and they were trying to access without their permission. And so she said, well, excuse me, who are you, and why are you trying to get into our backyard? And they claimed to be Comcast, and she said, well, since I see a plain car on the road with no Comcast markings and you're not wearing uniforms, she said, may I see some identification showing that you are indeed Comcast? And they refused.
Uh-huh.
So she said, no, you must leave now. So they left, and a little while later one of the dogs turned up poisoned.
It did die.
It was the 13-month-old Newfoundland male, and they spent probably about $5,000 trying to save it.
Mm-hmm.
But it had been given a neurotoxin mm-hmm. that the vet said could not possibly have been attained by a dog.
Was it able to be identified beyond anything that it's unusual to be in a dog? Did they come up with a definite chemical analysis on it?
They did not. I at that point in time, I think my parents were so grief-stricken that they
yes,
didn't
of course.
Ask
did you tell your mom and dad about any of the things that have been going on with the NSA in terms of harassment?
I did. I was telling them about that.
Before you went down there, I mean.
I had alluded to it, told them something about it,
uh-huh.
and then I more fully informed them when I got down there. I just didn't want to say that over the phone.
Right.
But they knew something was going wrong, and they knew that my work had been stolen, my promotions, et cetera, et cetera. So they knew something about it.
Karen, you had done nothing wrong. You're not a spy. You're not trying to reveal state secrets. All you wanted was what was due you for your stellar service to the country. And they're taking this kind of retribution against you. It is something that it really makes no sense, but it happens all the time. And I've talked to other people at great length about this, and I haven't heard anything of this exact nature by any means. But when you went to your mom's, they certainly probably had the house bugged by then. They also have the ability, I'm told, and you'd know more about this than I, to simply use a laser beam from distance, 50, 100 yards away, on any pane of glass, any window, and it turns that window into basically a microphone, a receiver, and the sound will go right up the laser beam, and they can hear everything that's going on in the house. This is supposedly older technology. Is that true?
You're entirely correct. In fact, at NSA, they Tempest the windows, meaning that they have copper mesh in the windows to stop other people from doing that to them.
Faraday cage. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're on your trip down there, and this stuff's going on.
Right. And I brought one of my dogs with me. So the dog was poisoned, but he didn't manifest symptoms for a little while. I would take the dogs out on a walk and start to establish a routine in the morning. And oddly enough, and this is a nice neighborhood, I would be followed walking the dogs by a car that would follow behind me at walking speed.
God, yeah.
So they followed me for my entire walk with the dogs around the block.
Did you turn around and stare at them?
Oh, yeah.
How many in the car? Two men?
You know, they had the dark tinting, so there was no way to see who was in the car.
But it
was a different car, and I said, eventually I got to realize there are probably about five different cars that would switch, one of them following me each morning. And if I would turn around and stand and block the person, then instead of getting out of the car or something like that, they would just drive around me, go down the road a few yards, and then wait for me to pass, and then follow me again. So obviously intimidation, you know. And then I had one of my sisters come down. She was staying for Christmas as well. And she helped me walk the dogs. And she looked behind her and she said, "What the hell?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's basically they're doing it for NSA." I said, "I don't know if it's a civilian or whether it's idiot FBI." I said, "But they have a car follow me around the block walking the dogs." And she said, "That is just insane." And I said, "I know." And so she witnessed it, and that would happen to me going around town. I was followed, and then they would obviously send what looked to be civilians into stores where I went to go Christmas shopping as if I'm secretly meeting Yvonne or Ahmed, you know, which was absolutely
right. Did they make their presence in the stores when they were following you deliberately known to you, or were you able at that time to pick up on these people lurking on the perimeter around you?
Well, these seemed to be civilians, and at the time I had no idea what civilians, but it turns out to be InfraGuard, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So these were awkward people who were following me around and looking like they were almost going to pee themselves if I looked cross-eyed at them.
Uh-huh.
So they were very nervous and acting very awkwardly, and so I started to be able to pick them out.
Right. For our listeners, we use the term, Karen used the term, InfraGuard, which is what I translated into a kind of a national patriot militia of people who have no problem doing crap to other people for money. They get paid very well for this. And there's an endless supply of them, because they think in many cases they're doing this for the country, and they're not.
Well, it is a shame to think that the United States is full of an endless supply of useful idiots, and that term comes from the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I got it.
So that was not a great Christmas visit. You know, but I tried to make the best of it, see family, enjoy Christmas as much as possible.
Sure.
Drove back up to Maryland, and as I was going back, I thought, I wonder what more is going to transpire now that I'm going back into the Viper's Nest. And so I got there, and apparently the 2.5 or so years that I was staying silent and just kind of being patient with them, started to wrangle them. And so once I got back, the NSA security decided to start playing games with me on the road. So what they were doing was what I call coordinated aggressive driving attacks, where they would surround me to either impede me or try to force me off the road or try to force me into a car accident.
So they'd box you in front, side, rear, and try to control your general movements with cars.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And then they started doing some dangerous things. And at that point, you know, they had poisoned the dog, and then they were trying to get me to wreck the car. So I went into my management one morning, and I said, "Look, this is what's going on." I said, "I've been patient. You know, I've been accused of something that I never could possibly have done." I said, "And it's been 2.5 years. I said, I'm either dealing with idiots or they're just not being honest. I said, so this has got to stop. I'm tired of this. I've done nothing, and, you know, I never have done anything. I said, I'm one of your most honest employees, and I'm just sick of this. I said, all of this because I wanted credit for my own work and promotion for my work that somebody else stole. It's got to stop."
I want to point out that there was a newspaper story that was falsely attributed to Karen as well, to try to make her into some kind of a loose cannon who couldn't keep her mouth shut and disclosed information that she should never have talked about, which was another setup, complete lie. This bothers me now. We're getting to the point where they're actually threatening your physical well-being. That's only one step away from murder. So let's go ahead with the story. This is not encouraging.
Okay. No, and so I thought maybe the management, who had known me for, you know, 2.5 years or so and had liked me, and we had gotten along well,
right,
that they might go to bat for me. But
right,
I had noticed once I got back that they were rather distant, and they wouldn't joke with me or say anything that wasn't job-related, which was totally uncharacteristic because we had a good relationship. But sure. At that point, I went to them, complained, and said they need to stop. And within 15 minutes, I was called down to the office of William Zephyr, who was basically a deputy for, and I don't remember which part of Q Group is security. He called me down. He said, well, we hear that you're imagining that you're being followed, so I want you to go to the security headquarters, and that was about 10 miles away, and we're going to strip you of your clearance, and we're going to put you on a red badge status, which is non-cleared, and we're removing you from your job, and you will be working at the travel bureau that basically keeps track of TDYs and NSA employee travel for work.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no what's your story? He had no interest in anything that I had to say. It was just, you're not going back to your work. You're just going to security, and we're going to arrange for you to start working at this other place while we figure out what to do with you. So that was that. There was no argument. He had no, like I said, he had no interest in anything that I had to say. So I did that. I went down and met with somebody who I basically would call a 30-year-old frat boy. And he was saying the lines that he was given to say, but he was smirking all the time he was doing it, so I knew he didn't even believe what he was saying.
Right.
And he was repeating the, oh, you're paranoid delusional because you think people are following you. And I said, well, you know, what if I tell you that some of those people weren't bright enough to take off their NSA badges? And at that point, he actually choked. And he couldn't get his composure back, and he jumped up and ran out of the room. So a second person sitting in there kind of fumbled around and said, just come back tomorrow and report to the travel office. This is where it is. And so I did, and I began working there. Well, the interesting thing to me was that the travel office shared a parking lot with NSA security headquarters. And as I was coming and going for this lovely job for the next 3 weeks, I was seeing the same NSA stalkers who had been harassing me for the past 2.5 years, recognizing them, seeing them in their real cars, and seeing them report to NSA security headquarters. So I started gathering license tag evidence, and since you can't have a camera on NSA property, I started memorizing some of their faces and drawing them, and I went to the Howard County Police, and I said, I want you to investigate these people. They have been stalking me for about 2.5 years, and I think that it's basically my employer has them doing it, and that's not legal. And they said, who's your employer? And I told them. Well, the Howard County Police then reported me to NSA. Unbeknownst to me, they didn't do any investigation. They just reported me to them. And I was naive to think that they wouldn't. And so within 2 days, NSA security came to me at the travel office and said, well, we want to hear your side of the story now. I said, are you kidding me? After 2.5 years, now you're interested in something that I have to say? And so I sat down with this woman named Jessica, and I told her the story. And despite what I told her, she basically went out, and I sat there and waited, and I was told by a second person, oh, come, we need you to see a psychologist, and another NSA psychologist, and I sat down at her desk. She'd never seen me before, and she said, well, we hear that you think you're being followed, and so I'm just going to say that you're paranoid and delusional, and you need to be on medication, and I am saying that you're dangerous and cannot be on NSA property anymore, so we're putting you on admin leave. And I was just stunned.
Oh,
and
Karen.
I thought, you know, if I were crazy and dangerous, would I be sitting here calmly listening to yeah. you instead of screaming or throwing things or whatever? And
right.
so I just looked at her and I said, okay, fine. Goodbye.
All right, that's and, a good place
so
to let's pause it right there. And
okay.
Next visit in a few days, we'll maybe I can get 2 hours. We can go 2 hours on this. It's a sad, sad commentary on our modern state of affairs and supposedly the government's most important work. One wonders how many individuals in the NSA, and it's obviously a big organization, have been singled out for this kind of treatment. These people are professionals at this kind of behavior, at this kind of intimidation and harassment. They do this all. This is what they do. This is what they do all the time. No doubt what they have done to some people has caused them to have breakdowns or worse, suicide. It wouldn't surprise me at all. We'll get to that. And we're spending our money doing this. And here you have in the NSA the woman you described, and there are probably many of them, sleeping her way right up the chain of command, doing what she's told, sleeping with who she's probably being told to sleep, and reporting back and compromising everyone. As soon as you slept with a married man, you own him. It's very simple. All of this is old, old stuff. It's called honey traps, and it's very, very disgusting to hear. All right, you are much appreciated. Thank you. I will talk to you very soon, and we'll schedule another visit. And if I can get you on next week before Thanksgiving, we'll do that. Maybe it'll just be an hour, but these are fascinating sections of your story. We will go through the whole thing, and it's going to get to be even worse. Thank you, Karen, very much. Oh, yeah. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
Good night.
Good night.
Karen Stewart. That's part two of our conversation, and we will follow through. Very brave woman. All right, we'll be back. Hold on.